The two principles of the Buddha said are essential to awakening. One is external, the other is internal. In some contexts, the external factor simply said the voice of another person. In other words, there are times when you listen to a Dharma talk and it wakes you up. There are cases in the canon, of course, where the Buddha gives Dharma talks and people immediately awaken, sometimes all the way to arahantship. But even if you don't get that far listening to a Dharma talk, many times you do suddenly understand things you didn't understand before, because you hear a clear explanation or an explanation that goes straight to the heart. At other times, that external principle is called friendship with admirable people, which in one spot the Buddha says is the whole of the holy life and so whole of the practice. Not in the sense that other people are going to do the practice for you, but you depend on them to know that this practice is possible. Think of it, if we didn't have a Buddha within living memory, how would we have any idea that there would be an end to suffering? Or that human beings could find that path and follow that path on their own. That's the external principle. The internal principle is appropriate attention, learning to look at things in terms of the Four Noble Truths, i.e. looking at things in terms of where there's stress, where there's a cause of stress. Things you can do to put an end to stress, and the actual fact that stress and suffering are ending. That's something you want to keep in mind all the time. And how does that principle develop? It develops here in your meditation and mindfulness and alertness, particularly in alertness and what's called ardency. Alertness is the ability to see what's going on. Ardency is the desire and the effort to be skillful in what you do. It's this principle of skillfulness that translates into appropriate attention. In other words, skills depend on there being cause and effect, and that some causes are productive of results that are better than others, more pleasant, less painful. And you want to sensitize yourself to that. So in the practice of mindfulness, for instance, you don't just watch things arise and pass away in a very passive, non-reactive way. You've got to notice, okay, when some things arise, good things arise with them. When other things arise, bad things arise with them. Or you want to notice when good things arise, well, what else is there that comes along with them, so you can get a sense of cause and effect. In other words, you have to learn how to read your mind, read your body in these terms. And this is how you become your own mainstay, because there is that other principle in the practice. The self is its own mainstay. Who else could your mainstay be? Who else could you depend on to become more skillful? You've got to learn how to do it. You learn about ideas of how to be skillful, suggested techniques in Dharma talks, in books. But the essential element in the practice is learning to develop this quality of alertness together with ardency. That's what it's called in the context of mindfulness practice. As you develop in concentration or jhana practice, it becomes evaluation. You evaluate what you're doing, how the breath is going, where it feels right, where it doesn't feel right. And making adjustments. So appropriate attention just doesn't sit there and look at things, it also moves you in the right direction. When you see that something's skillful, then you realize there's a duty that goes along with that. You want to develop it. If something's unskillful, you want to learn how to abandon it. This is how you keep watch over your practice. So when you're off practicing on your own, you can rely on yourself. It's like having an internal teacher kind of looking over your shoulder as you meditate, checking on how things are going. And getting to know your own mind, getting to know your own breath this way, it's like getting to know a person. As the Buddha said, you have to spend a lot of time with a person and be very observant if you want to know if you can trust them. If you want to know the person's purity, you have to have dealings with them. And again, over time and by being very observant, we get to know how pure that person is in his or her dealings. If you want to know a person's endurance, you have to know that person in times of hardship. And again, over time and by being very observant, you're going to notice these things. The same principles apply to the mind. You have to watch the mind, live with the mind, watch its dealings, see how it handles hardships, see how it frames questions. That's the other way you get to know a person's wisdom, is noticing how the person frames a question and tries to answer a question. Look at what kind of questions your mind is asking and how it goes about answering them. This way you get to know your own mind. You learn how to read your practice to see how it's going. And it's always best to take the breath as home base in the practice. John Lee calls it your home, Vihara Dhamma. Other meditation techniques, he says, are Gochara Dhamma, which he literally translated as where you forage for food, where you roam around. But when you stay home, you want to stay home with the breath. There's that passage in the canon where the Buddha teaches contemplation of the body to a group of monks. And then he goes off into the forest, and as they start contemplating, they get off on a wrong track. They get so disgusted with their bodies that some of them commit suicide, others hire assassins. And after a couple months, the Buddha comes out and he notices that the community of monks is a lot thinner than it used to be. The ranks have thinned out. When he finds out what's happened, he calls the remaining monks together. He says, okay, when unskillful states arise in the mind, go back to the breath. The mindfulness of breathing, he says, when it's done right. In other words, breathing in a way that you're sensitive to the breath, you're aware of the whole body as you breathe in, you let the breath calm down, you breathe in such a way, you train yourself to breathe in such a way that you give rise to rapture and pleasure, and even let them calm down. Says this clears away unskillful mental states from the mind in the same way that the first rains of the rainy season clear away the dust of the hot season. So breath is the safest of all meditation objects. So if you notice something strange coming up in your mind and you're not sure about whether it's going to be helpful or not, step back a bit and stay with the breath. Keep the breath as your frame of reference. And you find it to be safe. Or if you can develop that sense of just the knower, or bare awareness as separate from the object, that's even safer. But that breath is what leads you there. And in the meantime, the sense of refreshment that can come from the breath, it can clean out a lot of the dry and strained states of mind that you can sometimes get into when you're pushing yourself too hard in the meditation or you're pushing yourself in the wrong direction. So it's important as a meditator you learn how to read what's going on in your mind. And you have the basic common sense to sense when you're going overboard in any direction. So whether you're with the teacher or away from the teacher, you can learn how to depend on yourself. Because after all, this is how the Buddha came about his own awakening. It wasn't that like those Star Wars pictures you get in some of the Mahayana sutras of these other previously awakened Buddhas, you know, beaming their wisdom into his mind. He gained awakening because he noticed what was going on in his mind, what his mind was doing, what the results were. It was simple as that. And the greater the clarity of his alertness, the closer he became to awakening. I mean, it is possible when you meditate to get yourself into some pretty strange states of mind. And if you have that tendency to love to jump to conclusions, that's dangerous. There's a list in the commentaries of what they call the 10 corruptions of insight. The things that happen that lead people astray, make them think they're awakened when they're not. But the one of them is central, the one where you jump to conclusions. You're totally convinced that what you've experienced, whether it's light or knowledge or rapture or whatever, strong energy that enables you to stay up for long hours at a time, none of which is awakening. But if you suddenly come to the conclusion, this must be it, okay, that closes the door. So whatever attainment comes up, just stick a little question mark next to it and see what its long-term results are, because that's what it means to be alert, to have powers of evaluation. You see things in terms of cause and effect. And this is appropriate attention, looking at cause and effect and see, is there any stress? Is there any suffering? Now, some people got to a point and they say, well, it can never get any better than this, because after all, having a human body and having a human mind, this is the way things are, so you just learn how to accept them. That closes the door, too. When you ask yourself, is it possible that whatever level of stress or dis-ease there is in the mind could be abandoned? And how do you abandon it? Well, you don't abandon it directly, you abandon the cause. You learn, but you comprehend that stress for what it is. You have to learn how to see that it's not necessary. And the way to watch it is to see, well, is there any constancy there? Is it always there all the time? Does it never change? This applies not only to obvious stress, but also to subtle pleasures. If these things waver, okay, then that means that there's a condition that you haven't ferreted out yet. So try to apply your appropriate attention there. Look for the cause. Look for the result. When there's a wavering in the stress or a wavering in the pleasure, what else wavers at the same time? What movement of the mind happened? This is how you read yourself. This is how you learn how to teach yourself. Because for all of us, it's the same way, whether you're close to a teacher or not. You hear the instructions, but then you've got to put them to the test and then learn how to evaluate them. Like that image that John Lee gives, learning how to weave a basket. The teacher can tell you how to weave a basket and give you ideas about different patterns of weaving, how to shape the basket. But the words of the teacher won't make your basket beautiful. You've got to try making a basket yourself and then learn how to judge the results and see the connection between what you did and the results that you get. And over time, as you get more and more sensitive to your own actions and develop a more refined sense of what's acceptable and what's not, you become a better and better basket weaver. It's the same with the meditation. As you keep pursuing this issue of appropriate attention, where's the stress, what's causing it, what can we do to put an end to it? Makes you a better meditator, a more self-reliant meditator, and your meditation becomes safer. So always keep this principle in mind. were talking earlier about some teachings that say your problem is that you're not fully in the present moment. You have come to the moment with preconceived notions. And true awakening is having no preconceived notions at all. In other words, you've got to forget the past. That's not what the Buddha taught. He says there are certain things you want to look for in the present moment in terms of appropriate attention. And always keep that framework in mind. That's what you remember. That's what you're mindful of as you meditate. Because that points you to where in the present moment to look. Because otherwise, you could look at anything in the present moment. There's all kinds of stuff going on right now. You could look at the light as it reflects off the walls. The background noise that comes even in a relatively secluded place like this. There's all kinds of things you could notice. But they're really irrelevant to the issue of the fact that you're still suffering. There's still stress in your life, and you need to do something about it because you're going to die pretty soon. And if you don't take care of it now, when are you going to take care of it? So always keep the principles of appropriate attention in mind. That's your internal source for awakening. And regardless of whether you have the external source, admirable friends around, or the voice of someone who can spark an insight, that's secondary. The primary thing is whether you can maintain appropriate attention at all times. That's what will see you through.